you know, we're able to lead through that just by being consistent, by being professional, by changing the entire culture. But as a leader, organizational health is critical to people's overall wellness. It's amazing how people open up when you're willing to be vulnerable first. My definition of success is to make you successful. Building a team is about building vulnerability-based trust. And I think I have to have a leader that's educated in that paradigm and understand what that means. I think demonstrating that trust is really important. What does it mean for me to be vulnerable? Does it mean I come in and cry on your shoulder every single day? No. Vulnerability trust to me means that, hey, Chief, I don't get this. I'm having a problem. Do you know where I can get help?
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-hosts, Dr. Stacy Raymond and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMT. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with David Ogden. He's the Chief of Police in Windermere, Florida Police Department. We'll be talking about organizational health, overall wellness, resilience, dealing with adversity, and leadership. We'd like to invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're also on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV. Check us out on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and go to our website for past episodes and guest information. It's respondertv.com. We'll be right back to talk with Chief Ogden after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilient strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMTB.
Today we're joined by Chief David Ogden, who's been a successful law enforcement executive for over 37 years. He has led a positive transformation by changing the culture in his agency, and he holds a bachelor's degree in criminal justice and is pursuing a master's in leadership. Chief David Ogden is a keynote speaker on leadership, organizational health, team building, and mental health, and he holds a fourth degree in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Dave's family lost a child from a rare terminal illness, and Dave has spoken and lectured about going from grief to hope, the stress and management strategies to lead us through tragedy. Chief, welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Good morning, and thanks for having me here today. Nice to meet everybody.
Nice to meet Thanks. You.
Too. It's great to have you.
So, Chief, I'll start off by asking, when you took over the Windermere Police Department, what were some of the organizational challenges that you faced?
Wow, we could probably do an entire show just on that one. I took over after a 27-year career at the Orange County Sheriff's Office. I was very blessed, made it to rank a captain and infusion center director. I did everything possible. I knew I wanted a change in my life, and the Windermere Police Department came up. I wanted to go from a large agency to a small agency. But really, by every metrics that you could probably put out there, the Windermere Police Department probably should have been disbanded at the time. I always try to keep myself humble by acknowledging this one thing that, you know, the former chief of police got arrested, put in jail, did 9 years in prison. So he actually set the standard real low. So before people like pat me on the back too much, it was really set low. But there were lots of problems. So that was the first problem. The first problem was coming in there. And, I've been a leadership influencer my entire career, my entire life. It's something that I believed in, something that I loved. And teamwork is something that I love to do. From my early days of spending almost 15 years in the Sheriff's Office SWAT team, I believe that I brought the values and the vision and the mission to this agency that can change it. Again, so negative perception of the agency, a tiny police department, they were considering being disbanded. They were actually considering eliminating the police department. They had a unique position a few years before. I was actually in charge as a captain of the entire larger geographical area that included Windermere. And if you were to ask me about back at that time what we should do, and I would just say, just get rid of it. It's just not worth the headache. But really, much to my surprise, I've really found that the level of service that we can offer here was just 10 times greater than I could ever imagine. So the first thing that, is that we had a serious lack of leadership. Mm-hmm. And, you come in wanting to influence people positively and bring people aboard. And I've written my command philosophy in 2001. It's never changed. I did a lot of thought and insight into what I value, what I vision, how I want to lead, how I think people should follow and should lead. You demonstrate leadership by learning how to follow well first. And so I shared that with a team. I shared it with the team and said, listen, we have 90 days. We're going to make some decisions and maybe change some things around. As you know, I came in with a chain of command already that was in place. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, the lack of leadership had permeated all of that, all the way down to the bottom. So it took me actually about 2 weeks. People ask how long it took to know that real significant change needed to happen. It was about 2 weeks. And there was a lot of legalese that had to happen in the background. But within 30 days, the first thing I did was eliminate the entire chain of command. And I brought people from outside that I trusted, because I know about leadership and team building is one thing, is you have to build a community of trust. And that's kind of really hard to do. I did the basic management 101, right? I interviewed every single officer that was in here, and they all shared the same thing. There was no trust. There was no trust in the leadership. This is a very beautiful, affluent community, and officers would write tickets, and the deputy chief or the sergeant would come in and eliminate them. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, we just take them and rip them up. And the basic elements of building trust weren't there. In addition to that, really the team, the command staff team itself, just they hadn't earned the respect, the reputation, or even the time to be in these positions. So the very first thing that we did was tough, was we were already shorthanded. We didn't have a lot of staff on hand, as you can imagine. So we eliminated that entire chain of command, brought some people from the outside, and we started new. I could talk for hours about what was wrong, but everything, policies, procedures, you name it. Our application online had spelling and grammatical errors. It was really pretty horrendous, mm-hmm. to be honest with you, but we had to start with a team. Management 101, we created new position, new titles, new vehicles, new uniform. I call it my 3 R's, rebuild, rebrand, reimage the agency, and we started from ground one. I knew it would take long, but I knew, the only way to get to excellence is through consistency. Consistency will transform the average into excellence every single time. And that's what it's done. So happy to say, 10 years later, we have a brand new police department, built a $5.2 million facility. We got accredited, one of the very few small agencies in this country that are accredited police department, with only 14 full-time, 20 reserves, and a little bit more. So we've really made it a long way. And we're one of the only agencies around that are 100% staffed. Wow. In this day and age, we actually have people wanting to come to this police department. Mm. And it's really exciting. We had a lot of stuff happen. As we came in, we just rebuilt this agency. And one of the other things that happened within 14 months is we had lost our first ever officer in the line of duty. So 14 months into this, Officer Robbie German, March 22nd, 2014, was killed in the line of duty. This agency, this town, they'd never experienced anything like that before. And unfortunately, coming from a large agency, I'd experienced that multiple times. Mm-hmm. So I was on the funeral team, CISM team, and things like that. So I was kind of familiar with the process of how to do that. And I knew, again, we had to stick to our values and we had to pull the team together. Ironically, I say this, it shook the innocence of this town, because they always thought of it as this small little podunk Andy Griffith Police Department. And it kind of is, in a very neat way, it really is. And the town just didn't think this could happen. Uh-huh. How can this happen here? And 6 weeks before Robbie died, we had an Orange County deputy about a half a mile down the road was killed in the line of duty. So it literally shook and woke up this town. Hmm. I think from that point on, you saw a tremendous difference. So we were able to lead through that just by being consistent, by being professional, by changing the entire culture of who we hire and how we hire people. You want to hire for integrity, hire for humility, hire for, the talent as well. So all those kind of things that I love to talk about and teach, we really got a chance to kind of implement and influence. I did everything from, how we hire people, how we promote people. There was no promotion process, no vetted process, I'm blessed with so many years in this service, just knowing, a multitude of great people. That's really our key, right? My key, I tell people all the time, you hire me because my cell phone right here has like 3,000 contacts, and I have a personal relationship with the far majority of them. So I like to hang out with smart people. And when you do, you know, they help influence your community and your culture. So that's kind of the rough overview of all that.
Come on. Check it.
We had a lot of diversity coming in here. We had a lot of poor leadership that was in here. And we just, we really kind of just took everything that I've been talking and preaching about for 27 years and put it to practice. And we hired the right people. And, you know, sometimes we got it wrong. We went through some growing pains and some stumbling problems that we had. But at the end of the day, I think we've got a well-rounded team here. You know, I love our team. Doesn't mean we're perfect. Doesn't mean there's stuff going on and I don't have to deal with stuff, because leadership isn't easy. It's hard. Yeah. It's extremely hard to do the right thing.
Well, we're sorry for your loss and the department's loss as well.
Yeah.
You know, that brings us to kind of the next part of the conversation, which is, how vital is that organizational health to officer wellness? You've been around so long and imparted so many changes. What could you speak to that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's critical to organizational health. You know, I don't put myself out there as a mental health, I'm not licensed mental health counselor or anything like that. I facilitate lots of programs because of unique positions that I've been challenged with personally and professionally. But as a leader, organizational health is critical to people's overall wellness, which includes, I say, my wellness paradigm is mental, physical, spiritual, and relational. And it's extremely important. You know, if we create a team that can build trust, that is the essence of every research, every review that you do is about building trust in the team. And let's face it, you know, this line of work, first responder, we don't build trust very well. We say we do, we think we do. You know, if you've been, you know, on SWAT teams and things like that, there's no doubt you have a deep camaraderie that happens there that most people don't understand what it is. But I will tell you, you know, on a SWAT team, as a team leader on a SWAT team, I would go through a door and there was not a single doubt in my mind that somebody would lay down their life to protect me and do what needed to be done. But we would execute 5 search warrants and we would go to the bar later on and have a couple beers, and nobody would talk about their marriage. Nobody would talk about anything like that. And think about that dynamic right now. You know, I will step in to save your life. I will risk my life to save your life, but I won't give you good counsel, you know, on how to save your marriage. That makes no sense whatsoever. We're ill-equipped, and I think we're ill-equipped because leaders and organizations are not willing to talk about what I call those 4 factors. And you guys are professionals, so listen, I didn't recreate any new wheel. There's wheels with 20 paradigms on there and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. What I see from my experience as a leader is I've got to be willing to talk about mental health. I got to be willing to talk about the physical health. I have got to be willing to talk about their spiritual health, right? And in law enforcement, we just start running. Wait a minute, chief. You can't talk about church. You can't talk about this. I'm like, just time out. You know, that is not what we're talking about. Spiritualist. I personally have a deep faith, and that's where my spiritualist. I rely on that, and that works for me. But you know, what's our spiritual health is where our sense of morals, our values. What right. is the deep? And I find that when you ask these, and I ask our guys, you know, what do you value? You know, and look, you'll get the generic, oh, I value my family, I value God, I value whatever, a couple different things. But it takes somebody really experienced to dig deep into that. As counselors, you guys can appreciate that, right? Now, what do you value about your marriage? No, and when you start kind of digging into that and really figure it out, then you actually have these standards that you won't go past that bar. this is what I value, the relationship I have with my wife and the way that we can communicate, way that can, right. You know, that's an important part of that. There's a whole bunch of, you know, different paradigms in there. But I don't think leaders take any time. They're scared to talk about that. And it's really interesting. Like, you know, if I have a guy that, you know, is a strong Christian, strong believer, and I know he's going through a tough time, and he shared with me, you know, he feels better when he goes to church. He feels better when he participates in a men's ministry or women's ministry. You know, as a leader, I'd be remiss in not saying, hey, man, are you doing those things? Well, that's what makes you feel good. Okay, if you're, you know, if you're from Islam, if whatever the case may be, as a leader, it's my job to kind of really facilitate, right, and influence. When I've seen something that benefits your life, I should do that. And then, again, the last part of that is relational. I mean, we don't talk about that at all. You know, I remember early on, again, back in my younger SWAT days, and when I was having trouble in my marriage, and I'm sad to say that I have a divorce. I'm the quintessential law enforcement. And I, you know, kind of really try to tell the guys, the pitfalls of that. You know, the advice you would get is like, you know, get another one. There's plenty of fish in the sea. The horrible advice, right?
All right.
But we've got to be willing to do that. And I don't see. So, you know, some of the things that we're trying to do here is that I send our articles or blogs to my guys all the time. All the guys, and I say guys and the ladies all the time about marriage. You know, just marriage tips. And every once in a while I'll go, hey, chief, that was really cool. Thank you for doing that. We've got an expert that's, you know, that's going to come in and talk to you about, you know, marriage tips, relationship tips. But people just don't do those kind of things. They really don't. But those are the four, to me, that I've seen marrying paradigms that officers get in trouble with, right? You know, if your marriage is bad, guess what's going to happen at work? If not, things aren't going that good at well at work, guess what's going to happen in your marriage? Every one of us in this room know that. But why are we so, as leaders, so afraid to talk about those things?
So, Chief, you know, other than sending around blog articles, how does a leader break into those realms of talking about a healthy marriage or a healthy spirituality? How do you do that?
Building a team is about building vulnerability-based trust, right? That's what's really important. And we have to kind of understand, I think you have to have a leader that's educated in that paradigm and understand what that means. You know, what does it mean for me to be vulnerable? Does it mean I come in and cry on your shoulder every single day? No. But what it means, what vulnerability trust to me means that, hey, Chief, I don't get this. I'm having a problem. Do you know where I can get help? You know, and if you can build that team relationship, that's good. Because, you know, in most organizations, you don't want to be vulnerable, right? You have that fear that, look, if I'm vulnerable, they see something's wrong with me, I'm not going to move up that ladder. I'm not going to get that next promotion, that raise. I'm not going to get that spot on the team. That's just not going to happen. But leaders have got to break that down and say, hey, this is life. Life happens. And you got to be willing to share that and be vulnerable. You know, I share with my guys, we just did last year, again, we had our first transition ever. So we had actually some of the people I brought aboard, which were extremely professional folks that I brought from the sheriff's office. Jennifer Treadwell, first female deputy chief that we'd ever had in this agency, I brought her aboard here. She just retired last year. And, you know, after almost 40 years of service, Detective John Allen, one of the best investigators, I think, in the country, headed up the Casey Anthony case. Everybody will know what that is. I brought him aboard. So they retired last year. So last year was the first time that we actually got to infuse and bring up an entire new chain of command from within the agency. So that was one of my goals, is that these guys could see my definition of success is to make you successful. That's really what I and I say, you've maybe heard it before, but the older I get, the more important long-term goals become. And my long-term goal is that I want to leave and leave this successful where all these guys and ladies that are here can step in and fill my role. Matter of fact, they should be, you know, say, hey, Chief, we're sad for you to go, but just kind of move out of the way. We're ready to take over next.
Yeah, it's interesting because we feel it in this conversation, but your ability to connect with them on a human level is what builds their trust in you as the leader. To know that you're openly talking about your divorce or losing a child or any of the struggles that you've faced in your life gives them permission because you're already approachable. And we see that from 15 minutes of a conversation. And so, it seems like just being you, it's so important who that leader is and what they're bringing to the table in terms of their own past and how vulnerable they're willing to be.
It's amazing how people open up when you're willing to be vulnerable first. Because right. Listen, as cops and first yeah. responders, as medical clinicians, right? We're very attuned to human behavior and micro expressions and things like that. So we know when people aren't telling us the truth. Mm-hmm. And when people aren't telling you the truth, you don't want to build a relationship with that person. So, mm-hmm. we did a leadership program for the entire command staff last year and then the entire agency. And when I do that, I kind of go back. A lot of people here now, they know what I just talked about as a part of history. There's only like 5 people left here that were a part of that history.
Right.
So, you know, I share that. Hey, this is what we went through. This is how we kind of rebuilt this team. You know, and oh, by the way, you know, as I'm working, as we're doing this, as we're eliminating the team, as we lost this, then that's usually where I kind of introduce, oh, by the way, you know, just it wasn't over, a little over a year ago, a year and a half ago, I lost my own son. Mm-hmm. You know, so the fact of the matter is, while we're going through all this stuff at work, right, sometimes people forget, well, I got a personal life too.
Yeah.
That seems to be affecting me, or that is affecting me, no doubt about it. That, you know, that absolutely affected my life. So I'm kind of willing to share that. And I think in the class I spoke at with David, I kind of share that a little bit.
I go left, you go right, don't pick it up, don't dance all night. Well, I go left, you go right, don't pick it up, don't dance all night. I go left, you go right, live it up, dance all night. Cause you can want anybody. Oh, 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 oh. Well, I guess you had no. Oh, 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 oh. You're the man.
You know, I was a Fusion Center director. I don't know if you know what that is. Fusion centers were stood up after 9/11. And that was my last job at the sheriff's office. It was pretty important. Mm. 77 fusion centers across the country were responsible for integrating Homeland Security information for our region, for 5 counties. So as you can imagine, I directly, you know, gathered and gave the intelligence to the sheriff and everybody around, and had agents and analysts that worked from all the alphabet soup agencies that worked for me. So it was very important. But I say at the same time, you know, as we're going through that, we're living with a child who had a rare terminal condition, so we were watching him die, you know, for 4 years of his life. And people say, well, did that affect you? Yeah, it did affect me. How did it affect you? Now, I usually call my wife every afternoon at 3:30 or 4. Affected my entire life on how I live life. You know, I'm very active in the community, engaged and do lots of stuff, but I made sure I was home every day. Mm-hmm. At 5 o'clock, I even tried to slide out early, but I would call my wife at 3:30 or 4. And I laugh and I tell people, I say, you know, your kid tells you, you know, what'd you do today? And they go, oh, nothing. Well, we know that's not really nothing. But my wife would say, what'd you do today? And I would say, nothing. And I'm like, I really don't know what I did. You know, I've been sending emails. I've been in skiffs. I've been doing intelligence briefings. And, you know, I was there. I did stuff. But I, 6-7 hours later, I'm like, I don't know what I did. You know, I share a story, and you know, it's not a fun story, but as a captain, I briefed the sheriff and a bunch of people, and I don't even know what it was about. And I came downstairs and I walked outside the sheriff's office, big 11th largest sheriff's office in the country. And I walked outside. I was in full uniform, dress code, dressed out, just gave the briefing. And I remember standing right at the edge, and deputies came up to me and said, hey, Captain, how you doing? Oh, hey, I'm good. And I had my phone. Put my phone in my hand and I'm looking and I'm pretending to scroll through my phone. And I stood there for 20 minutes. And I stood there for 20 minutes because of one simple reason. I had no idea where I put my car. I couldn't find my car.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I literally couldn't find my car in the parking lot. So to fix the problem, I said, once I found my car, and it took, I started actually to panic a little bit, you know, inside, like how I'm a captain. These people are looking up to me, and I can't find my own vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
How crazy is that? So to fix the problem, because we're fixers, right? You know, I just say, hey, every time I come here, I'm going to park in the same row.
Yeah. Take a picture.
I'm never going to park in a different row. Yeah, take a picture.
Right.
With kind of band-aids. And that's what we do with our health, right? Our mental health.
We put
these little band-aids. So I'm going to willing to share those things and kind of make myself vulnerable too. Because listen, if we don't do it as a leader, if it's not encouraged as a leader, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen below you. So we've got to look for leaders that are willing to step up and do that. That have been there, that have been the boots on the ground. Mm. You know, I've earned that respect. I don't go out and write tickets or anything anymore. I try to do it once in a while, and I just mess it all up anyway. You know, but I've spent years on the SWAT team and undercover and intelligence and, you know, outlaw motorcycle gangs and all that kind of stuff. I've earned my time. I've done that. So we have got to be able to use, you know, it's just not for me to put little awards plaques on my wall. And mm-hmm. I really don't have any of those kind of plaques. They really don't care about me. The ones that plaques that I have are the officers that have worked for me and killed in the line of duty. Their family wrote me a letter or something. Right. That's what's hanging on these walls in here. Mm-hmm. That's something that means something like that. So for me, I guess it's if you want vulnerability trust, you've got to mimic it. Right? You've got to lead. That's the only way to do it.
I'm curious about how you cultivate leadership in your department. Do you look for certain qualities, traits, skills, abilities? And if so, or if not, what do you look for? And what's your technique or your process for taking someone who you think has leadership skills and helping them to start to promote up through the ranks and become an actual leader in the department?
Good question. And in a smaller agency, it's easier, and then sometimes it's harder. Mm-hmm. Right? There's not a lot of opportunities to kind of move up. But again, I think demonstrating that trust is really important. But cultivating the leaders by giving them opportunities to kind of serve. Now, one of the nice things about a small department is that you wear lots of hats. One of the things we did here that I wanted to do at the sheriff's office, but I didn't get a chance to do it, is I wanted to create a special mentoring program that officers could be rewarded for their experience, their skill sets, and as they step up. Mm-hmm. One of the things I found at the sheriff's office is that there was this linear approach, and police officers don't make a lot of money. And the only way that you can kind of hope to make money is by getting promoted through the chain of command, right? Mm-hmm. Not everybody wants to be a leader.
Right.
It's not easy. It's really hard. But if you're going to make more money and you're saying, you know, I'm going to do this in career, well, I got to go for corporal. If I go to corporal, I got to go to sergeant. If I go to sergeant, you know, I got to go up. But what I found is that we were having poor leaders. You know, it's very in vogue for everybody talking, you know, put out great memes and about all this kind of stuff about, you know, poor leaders. We all love to do that. But the reality is they all came from somewhere. And they all came from this process of there was no other option to make more money. So we created a true mentoring program here, which is an officer 1, 2, and 3. And increasingly what happens is you make more money as you move up that level. You have to have, you know, like 3 to 5 years, 5 to 7 years, 7 to 10 years. And my goal was this, is that I didn't want money to be the influence. I wanted to pay you. So in other words, a 10-year police officer, maybe a 10, 12-year could be an officer 3. Now, he's going to specialize in something. Maybe he's the taser instructor. Maybe he's a DT instructor. We have a guy that's a CPR instructor, a driving instructor. So we give them this opportunity to administrate some things, to learn how to project manage, to learn how to research, to do how to do all those opportunities. Mm-hmm. And we also tell them this, listen, we're going to pay you. And if you want to be a leader, if you want to be a sergeant, you have to really want that. And you have to demonstrate that all along. Mm-hmm. But if you don't want to be, listen, it's only going to be $1,000.
Right.
Let's stop incentivizing people to be supervisors just because everybody wants to make more money. Mm-hmm. Now, if you become a supervisor with us, and as the longer you are, you're going to make that money. But it isn't as big. And I've had people say, you know, I'm happy being an officer 2 or an officer 3. And when the sergeant, here's a couple things that happened. We're small. So now the sergeant could have theoretically 3 or 4 people to choose from when I go on vacation. I go out and I can put David in charge for this week, see how he does, mentor him, teach him, learn him about some things he can do better. And then David, you can say after 3 or 4 years, you know, I don't mind doing it for you, Dave, for a couple times, but I just really don't want it. It just really isn't worth my time, because in a small department, leadership does take a little bigger role. You know, we have staff meetings monthly, and one of the supervisors comes in on his day off. We're a very good community, which means we have lots of events and social things. And you may be that person that, you know, that's just not my life. I don't want to do that. Yeah. So lots of opportunity to grow, to show your growth, to show that you want it, but also to teach these guys and these ladies along the way how to really lead.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at Fairfield County TRT.
What do you think, just given the culture of the environment today, what is the formidable challenge as a leader at this moment in time?
Oh, wow. There's lots of challenges today. And I think the challenge, going back to kind of our initial conversation, is I think for leaders to discuss all the components of overall wellness. Mm. Why is that valid? If we read, and I'm sure you guys read all the, we came out of COVID, it's what, 3 years post-COVID now. Mm-hmm. But for law enforcement, my line of work, it was particularly bad because we had COVID where nobody knew what the heck was going on. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, listen, you guys have to work. They're like, but people are dying. Sorry, guys, you have to work. Wear a mask. And they're like, they're saying masks don't work. They're saying they do. Who knows? Listen, everybody argues extremism. I don't care. But the fact of the matter is anybody that isn't in this line of work and you were forced to work, in the back of your head, you're going, holy crap, what's going to happen? Yeah. Well, and if that wasn't good enough, you know, a couple months later, we had George Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So cops come up from being heroes to being zeros right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And if that wasn't good enough, let's have the trifecta, right? Let's make a presidential race in the middle of this. Everybody just hates everybody anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So think about that we had all that. So I think for first responders and law enforcement, we had the trifecta of things going on. We are still, we're still reeling from that. Okay. There are still people saying, why the heck would I want to be a cop?
Right.
I don't want to be a cop. You guys are under the microscope. The things are going on all the time. You're being forced to work. You're only making 40 grand a year. This doesn't sound very promising.
Right.
It really doesn't. So, I'm a believer in everything kind of happens for a reason. I think there's pros and cons to that. The bigger agencies are having a tough time finding people. I'm not. I'm getting experienced people from outside the state. We hired our first person in the academy and sponsored them. First ever. We've never been able to do that. Who could have went anywhere. Mm-hmm. She's a dynamo. She's here today. She's an amazing police officer. 45 years old. Her three grown daughters grew up. Graduated, and she's like, I want to do something different now in my life. And she's like, hey. And Nick got an opportunity to speak to her and say, this is why you should come here. You know, I ran community policing for one time in the sheriff's office for about 2 years. Bless them. They do a great job. But it is nothing more than taking pictures and having a barbecue and doing whatever. The level of service, and I say this every day, the level of service that my police officers offer their community, you can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
You go on vacation here, your house gets checked every single day. Miss Barbara came in yesterday because she was gone. She brings cake to us. We had residents bring her so much food yesterday. That's why I gained so much weight here.
It's the beauty of a small town, right?
It is.
Right.
It is the beauty. It is. They recognize, they see what's going on, and they're like, you know, this is. And so you got guys that are retiring. They're saying, you know, a lot of us don't make any money to our second career. Right? You leave, you get a, maybe a so-so package to leave, and then you go make another little bit of money, and they're like, hey, do I want to go over here where all this stuff is going on, or do I want to come here where people are waving at me with all their fingers? And
with all their fingers,
bringing me a cake, they're bringing me some food, they're telling me they appreciate me. Why would you do that? So, you know, again, we've been 100% full staff. Even again, last year we lost, I had one person transfer, two people retired, first time ever, and within 6 months we're back at full staff.
You know, it's nice to hear that even given the challenges in the environment in our country right now, that there still are departments like what you're describing, where people still feel valid and validated, and people walk in with a cake. I mean, I think it's important for people to hear that, because we've been hearing so much negativity and just how bad it is. It's really nice, I think, for our viewers to hear there's still a lot of good.
Yeah. There is, our team does a great job. So to kind of finish off that, David, I think in my presentation I did to you, we talked about building elite teams, and as a SWAT team leader, that was a big thing. And you know, every performance objective you look at, it builds teams, and they look at performance measures. You know, performance measures are one thing, but what you're looking at is building trust measures, and how do you build that trust? So everything I'm talking about is about building trust measures, being vulnerable, watching folks, giving them an opportunity to grow, and watching, really kind of watching what they're doing, and then giving them an opportunity to, you know, make a living, feed their family, and do stuff like that, and then kind of try to lead the way through that. And building trust, we all want it, we all say it, we're all like, great, but, you know, when's the last time you took a test that had a performance metrics on it?
Right. I think what you do also, that I've noticed, is that you are out there in social media and on the internet, both as a leader to your department, but also to the community. And I think that's important. You're probably building trust that way by being an expert, by being out there speaking at conferences and writing articles and blogs. That seems like a key piece to the process.
It does. We write those blogs. I write them for the town inside. We have a little gazette we do. And then we bring some things into town. I'm greatly involved in our community outside of this. It's a small town, but I live in the West Orange County, so one city over, which does have low income and poverty in certain areas. Mm-hmm. So we try to bring that here. We try to, and one of the ways we do, involve an organization. You guys may have heard of it, called Family Peace, Bunk Bed Build. So we build beds for kids who don't have beds, and we deliver them on the weekends. And, you know, one of the things I do, and I know you said we may mention the ministry I have on the side, is called Got Your Six Ministry. And what I try to do is just speak into officers' lives. I take my uniform off, you know, at that time. But, you know, I do three things. I build a community trust, have an educational platform. We do classes and seminars that I invite people in. I don't try to teach all this. I try to facilitate it. And the last thing I do is we create servant leadership by looking to give people opportunities to serve in different ways. And we get to deliver bunk beds to police, and it's really cool. I took a police officer one time who was going through a divorce. He said, let's spend some time together. Let's go deliver a bed. You might say, why would you think about something like that? Mm. Listen, anybody who's been through tremendous pain or tremendous grief, if you can get them serving other people, there is an amazing, amazing scientific data about that, what that does to rebuild your brain. Mm-hmm. And rebuild trust and give hope to somebody. And, you know, and listen, we go into communities that as a police officer, it's not here in Windermere, but I came up in these communities that were bad areas that were in. And I just tell them, I said, listen, you're not a cop. Yes, you can bring your gun, no police garb, no blue line, no anything else. Just be Dave, just be Stacy, just be Bonnie, nobody else. Mm-hmm. And I said, and we're just going to give this kid a bed. We're going to go in, we're going to build the bed, maybe talk to him, maybe not. Usually the kids are there, and we can do that in lots of different ways. And we get out of that, you know, and literally this guy said, this is the best day I've had in 6 months.
Wow.
I'm not a professional, but I know that serving others serves you more than anybody else. And I know that helped me, you know, as I went through any adversity that I had in my life. So, again, that's part of our mission. So I had three components to the Got Your Six, is to do that. And whatever I can do, and I try to stay connected on lots of boards because I just feel like my job is to connect people in the area. You know, I'm on Hope Center, the Dream Center, YMCA, all these different boards. And when people come up to me, go, hey, and they do, my guys know this. Hey, I'm looking for a place to serve. What do you like? I like to work with kids. I like to do whatever. Absolutely here. I'm sorry, I have my phone in the background.
It's all right.
We like the ambience. And Chief, I just wanted to kind of segue from talking about ministries to the MAT ministry and your long-term love of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Can you speak to the role that it plays in your life and how it might apply to training police officers? And then what is the MAT ministry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I've been a martial artist since I was 17 years old. So I started off, I had a fourth degree black belt in karate as well, a Goju karate, as well as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is, if you know anything about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's pretty high. I started early on, 1996, with the same instructor, and I've been blessed to have a long career. I enjoy it. I've traveled all over the country and the world into Brazil, competing at a pretty good level. Again, I always tell people, like, oh, were you a professional? I go, listen, I'm a cop. I was good. I was decent. But I did get to travel a lot and make some good friends. Mm-hmm. But I know this for me. There's nothing like when you get in there, and we call it rolling. Rolling is sparring. You know, we just, you're like wrestling. You know, we take each other down. We go to the ground. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like when you're just kind of down and out, just getting that physical. It's like hitting a bag or doing something like that. But what happens is you really can connect. You really connect with people when you're sitting on top of them, or you know, it's a different level of connection, right? It's a different, and the ladies too. And ladies at first, I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, you're gonna go where? No, anything can happen. And
I never had that.
Yeah, you build up, but it automatically builds up this trust, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
It really does. And when you're done, you know, there's nothing like a good hard workout. Mm-hmm. You get done. I know the guys for us, and the ladies. We would get done. We would sit on the side of the wall. We do it. I usually do Wednesday morning. I didn't do it today because usually my face is all scarred. And my wife is like, you know, today. But here's what we do. They sit on the side. Some of the guys drink coffee. I don't touch coffee, but, and life happens, right? We're exhausted. We're kind of vulnerable. And you're like, hey buddy. Hey, what's going on, John? He goes, oh man, my wife's mad at me about A, B, C, or D, whatever. And, you know, listen, I've been blessed to just kind of just say, hey, man, this is what helped me. Mm-hmm. This person over here, or maybe this connection, or had you thought about this, or, you know, mm-hmm, hey, for me, you know, hey, do you want to come to church with me? Do you want to visit here? Whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So I call it MAT ministry. So, you know, we all have a certain level of influence in our lives, whatever it is. And I believe that we're all just going to be held accountable and responsible for whatever influence we had, how we used it, you know, to whom much is given, much more is expected of them. And you know, I was given and blessed with a love and a passion for martial arts. I introduced in 1999, developed a ground fighting program for the sheriff's office. It's been used all over Central Florida. So I know I have that influence, you know, I know I do have that namesake. That people say, hey, this, if you want to learn about it, I usually get a call if it's in law enforcement, not directed to the right places. So I'm responsible for using that influence for a positive impact. And that's really what I try to do.
And you get to sweat it all out, right?
Yeah,
the stress.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
It's interesting because I know a lot of law enforcement officers who do jiu-jitsu, and I never really analyzed to how you just explained all the parallels, and it makes so much sense. It's so much like first responder work, right? You're getting in there, you're bonding over something really difficult. You have to trust that partner you're with. Mm-hmm. So how you just captured that is really incredible, and I'm thankful.
If I can share my experience and help just one person, or help one person help somebody else, that's what it's all about.
We're trying to break down the stigma. We're trying to share that there are great, effective resources out there.
Vulnerability is a strength. It's not a weakness.
What I've heard from all of the subjects in my film is that I think my story can help someone else.
And as police officers, we always want to go in, see problem, fix problem. And you can't do that with a mental health crisis. You have to see person and connect with person.
This sucks, but I'm going to have to embrace this suck. You know, I don't like these cards, but these are the cards that I've been dealt.
and I'm going to have to play them to the best of my ability. And I've been trying to do that for the last 10 years.
You know, I have one story I'd love to tell. I mean, he wasn't a first responder, but I know an individual, and he came in and he came to our school from a couple schools, and things weren't going well. But I asked him, you know, I sat down with him, asked him, what do you want to accomplish? What is your goals? He goes, I want to be a world champion. I go, all right, that's easy enough to do. I can make you a world champion. I said, if you're committed, you're focused. I said, we got the people, and we've brought people to those heights and professional and everything else. I go, what kind of man are you? And he goes, what? I go, well, I said, are you married? Do you have kids? Do you have what? And I started asking all these questions. And we sat for an hour and a half. And he was, I think he was 35 or 36 years old. And we got done, and he said, I've never had a man talk to me like this before. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, nobody's ever asked me these questions. I go, are they important to you? He goes, they really are. I go, listen, I'm going to tell you, if you want to be a world champion, I can make you into a world champion. I said, but that isn't why I opened this school. That's not the most important thing to me. Mm-hmm. I said, what kind of man you are is really, really important to me. And what, you know, because it actually tells people what kind of man I am, if I can speak into your life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was blessed with that opportunity to talk to him. And he just kind of, I'll never forget that. At a kind of later, I remember talking to my wife about it. I'm like, no guy's ever asked him questions. Mm-hmm. What do you want your man? And he's 35, 36. It's like, mm-hmm. I can't find a wife. I can't find a relationship. I'm like, what do you want? What do you mean? I just want to be married. Like, so we had just had this vulnerable conversation for at least an hour and a half. It was crazy. It was cool. It was a cool day.
You've shared quite a bit with us. And my question for you is, what's next for Chief Ogden after 37 years in law enforcement?
Well, you know, my definition of success is to make these guys successful. So I get them ready and prepared to kick me out the door, which is really cool. You know, I've been doing some things in the background, writing articles and blogs and speaking engagements. So I love an opportunity to do those and meeting with a few guys to actually develop a new leadership program that we want to get out into the community and kind of share that a little bit more. So that's what's next for me, but also just enjoying the opportunities that I have here and enjoying our folks and our team.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. Thank you for sharing all that with us. And how can people find you out there on social media, LinkedIn, the internet, email, all that good stuff?
Oh, yeah. Well, a couple different. You know, listen, I don't hide my name. My name's right out there, so they can find me on social media, Facebook and stuff like that. The only unique name I have is my Instagram is the Jiu-Jitsu Chief, only because I kind of separate that just for my Jiu-Jitsu stuff. And then cool. Mm-hmm. I have a social media page that's here. For the Got Your Six, they can just Dave, just use my name, Dave, oops, on the side, dot, Got Your Six, spelled out, GOTYOURSIX at Gmail. They can reach me out there, and if they want to connect, I'd love to connect with anybody.
Beautiful. Well, we want to thank you for being with us and sharing everything of your journey as a chief and as a human being in the world, being of service. We really appreciate that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Nice to meet everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Remember to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the major podcast platforms. And our website is respondertv.com with information about past episodes and our guests. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.